It's Morning Edition on 90.1 WABE. Good to have you along. I'm Dennis O'Hare. One fractious National Party convention has ended. Another one is beginning. And we've got our political analysts back with us. Brian Robinson is a former deputy chief of staff to Republican Georgia Governor Nathan Deal. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist who was National Southern Regional Director for the Obama 2012 campaign. Welcome back to you both.
Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks, Dennis.
Just a nice quiet week. Let's start with the Republicans, and let's look at this from the point of view of Georgia, because Georgia was a big presence in the Republican National Convention. It is a big presence in the Democratic National Convention. Ryan, I have to start with you. Is the Georgia GOP coming out of Cleveland? And remember, Georgia is a state where Ted Cruz finished second to Donald Trump. After what Ted Cruz said in Cleveland, is Georgia coming out of this convention unified for what could be a battle in November?
There are a lot of schisms within the party because Donald Trump does have some policy differences from what traditional Republicans, particularly the conservative wing of the party, which is what dominates here in Georgia. And I think, however, we are fairly unified despite that, despite those schisms, because we're unified by our desire to not see Hillary Clinton in the White House. That is why you heard so much anti-Hillary rhetoric in the convention last week. That is one of the most unifying factors that we have right now. How unifying? Well, when Ted Cruz went and led a big stinker at the convention last week, he went and spoke to his own Texas delegation the next morning and got a very hostile reception from a crowd that probably voted for him overwhelmingly in the Texas primaries because people are so committed to seeing Hillary get beat this fall. I think that's going to be true in Georgia, too. But what we don't know yet is how big is the Eric Erickson faction here, you know, this never Trump faction. If a lot of Eric Ericksons are out there not showing up because they cannot support Donald Trump, or who are like me and are considering voting for the Libertarian ticket, what does that do to the Republican turnout?
I think one of the things that was so epic and really interesting about Senator Ted Cruz's speech is that I think he made a fundamental decision, and he said, listen, Donald Trump, you went and picked Governor Mike Pence because you say you needed someone to unite the party. And what he meant by that is that I wanted to find the most, you know, conservative person that had a clean record that I can pick. And what Ted Cruz did was, I think, more aimed at Mike Pence than it was at Donald Trump, because what he did is that he said, listen, Governor Pence, you're not going to take away the power and influence that I've worked so hard for on this campaign to really be the voice and the face of the most conservative wing of the Republican Party.
He thought that Trump was trying to freeze him out for 4 years from now.
Absolutely. Listen, Ted Cruz's speech, if you listen to it, and one of the things that he did do is that, unlike Donald Trump, he did acknowledge that there were victims and their families from the recent police shootings that we've experienced with unarmed black men, and in this case, some armed black men as well. We had an unarmed black man down in Miami, had two armed people, in one in Louisiana, one in Minnesota. And so I think the speech was basically a look forward for Ted Cruz, saying that I want to be relevant and I still want to be the voice of the most conservative wing of the party 4 years from now.
He's right. And huge gamble for Ted Cruz there, because a lot of my Republican friends who are at very high levels of the party say that Ted Cruz has ended any hope. He has created such bad will. He has shown such bad faith to try to divide the party at a time when many Republicans, after 8 years of Obama, are terrified of another 4 years of left-wing Democrat governance, extra-constitutional executive overreach. We feel like we've got to be committed and unified to stop her.
But did those Republicans express that anger to Ted Cruz when just 2 days later, right after his speech, he comes to Georgia to campaign for Mike Crane in the Republican runoff in the 3rd Congressional District, which has been represented by your old boss, Lynn Westmoreland?
Yeah, that's right. But you're seeing the establishment of the party rallying very hard behind Drew Ferguson, Mike Crane's opponent. And this just added fuel to the fire. And I think it was really bad timing for Mike Crane to have Ted Cruz come down there. On the one hand, they had a great visual. They had a standing room only, very enthusiastic crowd, which I give them credit for. It's hard to pull that off in a congressional race because there's so little interest in them normally. But you're also seeing a lot of the business community, a lot of rank-and-file Republicans, a lot of people just feel like, why in the world would you go out and do something that helps Hillary? On the other side, bad timing for Mike Crane. I would not have wanted to do that on the day that it happened.
And full disclosure here, your old boss, Lynn Westmoreland, is endorsing Drew Ferguson in that race.
Well, that's right. And listen to what Lynn says in that commercial that he's doing. Here's someone who can go to Washington and get something done. You know, Lynn Westmoreland went to Congress as a bomb thrower minority leader from the Georgia State House, not as someone committed to governing, but he's grown into that statesman role, and he's actually gotten a lot done for Georgia. He's helped us on water rights year in and year out in the budget. And Mike Crane, if he goes up there and votes no on everything and votes against the Speaker of the House, we're not going to have a seat at the table for the issues of greatest importance to the people of Georgia.
I just love the energy from Brian. I think coming off last week, he can really come on this show and be a very staunch conservative Republican again. The one thing I'll say about Congressman Westmoreland is, again, it's very politically astute on his part. If you turn on your television set, like many of our listeners are doing now, you see Congressman Lynn Westmoreland's face all over the place. I think this is not about necessarily...
Well, you see him, but you don't see Drew Ferguson.
That's my point. So you don't see Drew Ferguson, and what I think Lynn Westmoreland is doing is that this is sort of a beginning of a, you know, run for statewide office. I mean, he's definitely got the name ID. He's got name recognition. But, I mean, for him to be on as many commercials as he is and to not see Drew Ferguson and have a former congressman, as Brian described, was really a bomb thrower, was a very sort of, I don't want to say Trump divisiveness guy, but definitely opposed things like Voting Rights Act and making sure that we did everything to strengthen that. It's very interesting that he's very vocal in that race right now.
And
part of why he's on there alone is because this is a third-party ad. He's on a Chamber of Commerce-sponsored ad. He's not on a Drew Ferguson paid-for ad. It's a consequence of our arcane election finance system.
Citizens United, too.
Yes, right. And interesting theory by Theron. I think there are a lot of people who agree with Theron that it's just getting free airtime for Lynn. I don't buy that. I think, one, he really does care about having the right person succeed him. I do think he genuinely cares about what we need to have represent us in Congress. And also, there's a downside politically to him doing it because Mike Crane does have fervent supporters, and he may have made enemies in his own district.
But Lynn Westmoreland and my colleague Rose Scott and I have asked him several times during his visits with us when I was on Closer Look. We have asked him, would he run for governor? And he hasn't denied it. He's kind of grinned and, you know, but he has never said no.
And I think that's why, I mean, listen, whoever's advising him, and I would assume that Brian maybe talks to him occasionally and say, hey, may not be a bad idea for you to get your face out there in the Atlanta media market because it's a very expensive market. And if you're thinking about running for governor in 2 years, may not be a bad idea.
That's true. I mean, it's true. Anytime I tell politicians I work for all the time, anytime you can get your face out there on the airways reaching 400,000 people at a time and you're not paying for it, take advantage of it.
Back to the Republican convention for a moment. Not only did Ted Cruz do well in Georgia, but there was hope among many Georgians that Newt Gingrich, rather than Mike Pence, would be the pick for vice president. Brian, I'll start with you really quickly. Does that make Georgia a little more risky for Republicans, even though they have taken the state in presidential election since 1992?
I don't think so. I think the entire VP debate and discussion will be long over, but long before anybody goes to the polls to vote in this election, and people will have come to peace with Pence when they see his record. He was one of the most conservative members of Congress. He and Lynn Westmoreland actually did a lot of stuff together. I remember as Westmoreland's communications director getting called into the Speaker's office to get blessed out by Dennis Hassert and Tom DeLay's communications team because we had a news conference calling for Katrina recovery money to be offset with cuts elsewhere. We just got reamed. That's how right-wing this guy is, how conservative he is, and, of course, made a lot of national controversy by signing the religious freedom law in Indiana, which pleases a lot of the right-wing of the party. So I think the base of the party is going to be pleased with Mike Pence as VP. I don't think, however, that Tim Kaine or Mike Pence make a penny's worth of difference in this election. This is the Hillary versus Trump show, and that is that.
What about Georgia, though?
I totally disagree. I think that a pick of Speaker Gingrich would have definitely done well, not only in Georgia, but let's face it. I mean, Speaker Gingrich is someone who plays very well in the South. I mean, this is a gentleman who won South Carolina when he was running and doing the Republican
primary. Running for president.
President in South Carolina in 2012. But let's get back to Mike Pence. And I totally disagree with Brian. I think this was a politically arranged marriage that's going to have very early problems in their sort of newlywed phase. Let me just be more specific. This is a governor who signed one of the biggest discriminatory pieces of legislation that clearly discriminated against people in the LGBT community, and he cost his state millions and millions and millions of dollars in jobs because he signed this so-called religious freedom bill. Secondly, this is a gentleman who compared Obamacare to 9/11. This is a guy who basically is going to have to answer questions to people in the middle about how he has one of the most regressive tax systems in Indiana than any other state in the country. Again, these are issues that he comes to the table with that I think Donald Trump and his team are going to have to answer very soon. And I think that particularly around the religious freedom bill and also some of his comments. And let's not forget, this is the same member of Congress, a former member of Congress, who led the effort to defund Planned Parenthood. That's not going to play well with independent white women and women of color voters who are very pro-choice in this country.
I don't think anybody's going to know those things about Mike Pence because nobody cares what the VP thinks or what his history is. I think his only role here was to let rank-and-file Republican voters know that they can trust Donald Trump, that he's going to hit his pick of Pence, who is on the far right of the party or represents that element of the party, is an indicator of what he's going to do when it comes to Supreme Court picks, which is one of the most important things amongst Republican voters right now, not losing that Scalia seat.
I think the one thing that Brian forgets in 2008, because I always have to remind my good friend about history and political seasons, John McCain picked Sarah Palin. John McCain was polling exceptionally well across the country. In some battleground states, he was leading President Obama. He goes and he picks Sarah Palin. She gets interviewed, and the American people said, oh, my God, there's no way that I can vote for John McCain, because if that woman is elected as vice president, our country is going to be very in trouble. So I think, again, this is a very unpredictable electorate right now. I think people are going to be paying very close attention to Senator Kaine and also to Governor Pence as well.
On the subject of unpredictable electorates, let's shift now to the Democratic National Convention, which is just underway. Lots of Georgians are on the speaking bill. House Minority Leader Stacey Abrams of Atlanta just spoke last night. Meanwhile, we have Kasim Reed, Atlanta's mayor, on the speaking bill, former Senator Jason Carter on the speaking bill, and a video from former President Jimmy Carter himself and John Lewis. So, Theron, who's being watched closely here? You've got two rising stars in Reed and Abrams who don't always see eye to eye, let's put it mildly.
Georgia Democrats have two chances here that we need to make sure we take full advantage of. Number one, we're going to have five of our stars in the Democratic Party here be on the national stage. I think that they're going to be able to really talk about values, and they're going to be able to talk about some of the great work they're doing in Georgia. And at a time when we're seeing articles where Georgia is getting closer and closer to being a battleground state for Democrats, where, you know, some are saying that it's a purple state, I think it's more of a sort of a lean Republican sort of pink state right now. I think that's something that is going to be very beneficial. What's going to be very interesting to see at a time when we just heard Stacey Abrams' speech, and she did a good job, and I think she really put herself on a really good national platform, is to really see what Mayor Kasim Reed is going to talk about, to also to see Congressman Lewis, who I think is going to be really, really good to talk about the progressive wing of the party. And also, you know, listen, it puts Jason Carter in a great position, a guy who we really haven't seen a lot, who's going to be able to introduce a video from his grandfather and to really talk about some of his Georgia roots as well.
Carter's already run for statewide office. Reed and Abrams are widely rumored to be looking at statewide office. All three of them have at times bumped heads with each other.
Correct.
So how do the Georgia Democrats hold themselves together when they're trying to project all of these stars and a unified picture?
Well, what's got to happen is, and it's something that I call on Chairman DuBose Porter to do, is when we get back, I mean, Democrats have got to get in the room, and especially those five that we just kind of highlighted and really say, okay, listen, we've come out of the convention. You know, Hillary Clinton is going to get a bump in the polls just like Donald Trump did. And let's say, okay, what did we learn in Philadelphia? You know, how can we sort of apply some of those things into Georgia? And quite frankly, I think with those three particular individuals in Stacey Abrams, Kasim Reed, and Jason Carter, if they decide to run in 2018, this is a great opportunity for them to not only build on their coalition, but to really get in the front of donors who I think will be needed, and if they want to run statewide, to raise a lot of money for their campaigns.
I think this is a wake-up call for Georgia Republicans in a good way, because as Theron said, it is still our state. We are still a red state, and we're going to win this November in almost any scenario. It's going to be perhaps tighter than 4 years ago because, it, you know, that margin does get smaller and smaller and smaller. But not by too much. It's not nearly as fast as the Democrats tell us every cycle that it is. The focus that Democrats are putting on Georgia, though, should focus us on the importance of keeping this state red and of looking at the solid math in Georgia and figuring out how we stay at 51% or above, because it is slowly getting smaller every year. And Georgia's strong economy, being the number one place in the nation for business, a university system that is every day getting to be more and more world-renowned, home of many Fortune 500 companies, that sort of growth is a reflection of the strong conservative principles of the leadership in this state. Our policies are working, and we need to make sure that Georgians stay in control of this state. But having Stacey Abrams and Jason Carter and Kasim Reed, John Lewis speak shows, Democrats think that they have an opening here. It's our job to close it.
Theron, the Democrats don't have to look too far back in history to look at what happens to their bench when stars collide. You had the Mark Taylor, Kathy Cox runoff for governor, which ended up with the candidate who survived losing the election and the party pretty much shattered for a while. Could this happen again?
Dennis, you know, we all remember what happened in 2002, and it was when we unfortunately lost the governor's mansion. But the one year that I have the most nightmares about is 2006. You're exactly right. Think about that, what we had at that time. We had a female candidate in the Secretary of State, Cox, who was revered, who was very popular, who had done a lot of things at the Secretary of State's office. We had Lieutenant Governor Mark Taylor, who was from Southwest Georgia, was a very, you know, well-known Democrat, well-funded, and the two of them ran against each other, and it was a very, very negative
race. It was nasty.
It was very and you know what? And to this day, I still talk to Democrats. And I particularly talked to white women who were Kathy Cox supporters, who I had not seen until Michelle Nunn ran unsuccessfully 2 years ago, who came back to the party. What I'm not going to let happen, and I know other Democrats are not going to let happen, is to have a very qualified bench of people like Mayor Kasim Reed, Stacey Abrams, and Jason Carter, and there may be a couple others all running against one another. Now, I may say I'm not going to let it happen. There's nothing I can do alone to prevent these folks from wanting to run. But to Brian's point, the good news is that for the first time in a long time, Dennis, even though 2006 gives me nightmares, we have built up a bench, and these folks are on the national stage, and they're people who bring a lot of different things to the party, and I think that the people of Georgia are going to pay very close attention.
But
the
Brian,
problem for the Democrats, though, is they don't have a bench. You know, a bench are the people after your first five in basketball. They don't go past the first five.
Brian, that's not true. We have a person who, and Mike Thurmond, who was just elected as a Democratic nominee to go on to be hopefully the next CEO of DeKalb County. I mean, this is someone who's run statewide before, who's won. And so I think once you get past him,
we have someone who's lost by 16 points.
But if you get past him, you got people like Stacey Evans, you got people like Scott Holcomb, you have a lot of young rising stars, you know, Elena Parent, who you like, who you complimented before. These are all white men and women that are in our party that are really, I think, on the rise and who can really, you know, make sure that they continue to elevate themselves. So I disagree with you that I think we have a good five, and I think we have a sixth man, a seventh man, and maybe an eighth woman and a ninth woman that can come off the bench and definitely make sure that we turn Georgia blue again.
Real quickly, let's take a look at some of the runoffs which are taking place today, although a lot of folks have already voted early. Let's run through them real quickly. We've already talked about District 3, the Republican runoff in the 3rd Congressional District. Cobb County, Brian, full disclosure here, you were working with Tim Lee's campaign to run for re-election as Cobb Commission Chair. Mike Boyce outpolled him but didn't win in the general primary. What do we think here?
I tell you, I did not know Tim Lee before I went to work on his campaign after the primary. I've just done the runoff stuff, and I have thoroughly enjoyed being around him. He is funny. He is down to earth. He is willing to work really hard. And I think no matter what happens tonight, he will have left a tremendous legacy for Cobb County. Revenues are higher than they've ever been. Tax Digest is higher than it's ever been. Taxes are the lowest in the metro region and really near historical lows for the entire county.
Should there have been a referendum on the stadium?
That was never an option. And that is the problem with the entire debate in this election. The choice was between having a stadium approved by the commission or not having a stadium. There was no third choice. And Mike Boyce is running on the premise that there was a third choice. That is a false premise. And he can't talk about any other issue going on in the county besides that. And it's false. So you have Tim Lee who's talking about his record. He's talking about what he's going to do. He's actually cutting taxes again right now. And there's no legitimate argument pushback against him because even Mike Boyce admits the county is very well run. How empty is Mike Boyce's rhetoric? Well, he didn't even show up for the debate here at WABE.
There's an Atlanta Press Club debate, and full disclosure, I've just stepped away from the debate committee after many years.
Listen, Brian just really, I think, you know, talked about Chairman Lee in a way that, quite frankly, I haven't had a lot of people talk about. I mean, listen, I've gotten to know Chairman Lee because I've actually toured the Braves Stadium and actually got a chance to know him. But I think what you're seeing in Cobb County, at a time where, you know, a lot of folks thought that they were getting this great deal in Cobb County by getting the new Braves Stadium, I think the way it was handled, the lack of transparency, and sort of the process is what I think upset a lot of Cobb County voters. So I think that's going to be a very close election. And, Brian, you know, I'm not taking the favor. I'm not endorsing anyone in the race, but I know that you've been working hard on it. So I hope it turns out favorably for you, brother.
I appreciate that. I do, too. I mean, I really, you know, I don't always emotionally invest in races, but I have in this. Really, even though I don't live in Cobb County, I live in DeKalb, and we'll get to vote on Michael Thurman at some juncture, I guess. But there was transparency. There was 5 public hearings. There was an open vote. A supermajority of the commission voted for it. This is an example of one media outlet in this region running a 3-year campaign against Tim Lee. One negative story after another, many of which had dubious facts.
There were instances where, like, there were public hearings, but the slots were all taken by stadium proponents before the opponents could even sign up. I mean, there were legitimate questions raised about process, weren't there?
There was an open and fair and transparent process. There was no one in America who cares about baseball who did not know that Cobb County was considering this vote. The idea that there's anybody in the county that didn't know what was going on, that it was all happening in secret, is beyond belief.
From Cobb to DeKalb, a very nasty runoff for one of the commission seats. Theron Sharon Barnes Sutton, the incumbent, is facing a really strong challenge, and it has gotten, I don't even know what the right word to express it would be between these two.
Well, what's very interesting is that the race, as you pointed out, Dennis, has gotten very negative. And listen, you know, it's in a runoff, and a lot of people in DeKalb County are not really focusing on this election because the early voting numbers, as you can tell, are very low. You know, I think that, you know, what's happening in DeKalb, and you saw this with Michael Thurman's election, is that the people of DeKalb, as Brian pointed out, he lives there, are really looking for someone who can bridge the North and South DeKalb divide that exists. And I think what you have in this race is that it's sort of a closer look at what's been going on in DeKalb, and do you really feel that the services that you've received are adequate, or versus if you bring someone else in, what type of change is that going to bring? So I predict that the turnout is going to be very low. I think it's going to be a very close election, and I think that it's something that other commissioners who are on that commission should be looking very closely at.
Back to the DNC for just one quick second. And Theron, it has gotten so tough at the DNC over the email leaks and the Bernie Sanders campaign feeling cheated that Congressman Hank Johnson, an icon of Democratic politics, was booed by some folks anyway at the Georgia delegation yesterday.
Dennis, I did hear that, and it's very unfortunate because Congressman Hank Johnson is a great man. I know him very well. And listen, he is committed more than anyone to making sure that Democrats win in November, and especially Hillary Clinton. What's going on with the Bernie Sanders supporters, and I think that Bernie Sanders did a really good job last night of calling on them to say, listen, there were some problems in the process. We ran a very honorable campaign, but we came up short, and Hillary Clinton won fair and square.
And you have favored Hillary Clinton.
Right. As far as, and let me make clear, fair and square when it came to voting, actual votes. And I've supported Hillary Clinton, but I think that the one thing that now other speakers have got to do is really point out the platform committee's effort to basically have this show the unity message. We've already said that we're going to revisit the superdelegate process. We're going to look at doing that differently in 2020. And so I think that we just got to continue to be unified and not show the American people what they saw last week with the Republican.
Yeah, there was this immediate poo-pooing of the conservative faction of the Republican Party having this control over the platform committee and some of the elements of it. You're not seeing that poo-pooing of the left-wing elements of the Democratic platform to appease the Bernie supporters on the left. And what we saw last night was that the Democratic Party is just as divided as the Republican Party. We saw it over the weekend with the DNC's emails where there was, in fact, as Donald Trump says, a rigged system where the party infrastructure was putting their thumb on the scales for their preferred candidate. It's obvious. I mean, there's no denying it anymore. It is written down in ink. And the divide between the left, who are Bernie folks, and those who are in the establishment, who want Tim Kaine, who is much too conservative for many in the party, is going to be just on display this week.
So, Brian, you have said earlier in this broadcast that you might consider the Libertarian candidate, Johnson. Theron, there are some Bernie supporters who are either saying maybe Johnson, maybe Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate. I've seen some polls that show right now the Libertarians with up to 9% of the vote. Does that play havoc for either side here in Georgia or in some of the key battleground states?
The Clinton campaign is going to continue what you saw last night, not only from their surrogates and the speakers, but particularly from Hillary Clinton. I think one of the things that, you know, your listeners should be very prepared for is that when Hillary Clinton speaks, I think she's going to reach out to the Bernie supporters, and she's going to draw a very staunch contrast between what she offers versus what Donald Trump offers. And so I think a lot of these Bernie Sanders supporters, while they may be a little disappointed, a little discouraged, which they rightfully should, at the end of the day, I think they're going to look at the two candidates and they're going to vote with Hillary Clinton.
You know, everybody keeps talking about how there are these huge schisms within the Republican and Democrat parties. Well, this is a nation with 320 million people all shoved into two different parties. We are way too diverse of a nation for two parties to be cohesive and homogenous in their viewpoints. Maybe it's time that there be other options, because I think Donald Trump represents a lot of Republicans' feelings, but then in a lot of ways, a lot of what he stands for goes against where many Republicans are. For me, I'm looking somewhere else. Even though I am a Republican, I will continue to be Republican and continue to vote for Republicans up and down the ballot. I am a free trader. I believe in entitlement reform. I believe that Democrats are going to spend this country into bankruptcy, and that we have a moral obligation to take tough decisions and quit spending money.
Final thought. Will we see either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton coming into Georgia to campaign seriously rather than come into Georgia, which they certainly will do, to use it as an ATM for fundraising?
Absolutely. Listen, I think you're going to see Hillary Clinton here at least 2 to 3 times before November. You're going to see President Bill Clinton here at least 4 to 5 times. But I'm very excited to see President Obama, who I know Brian loves, will be here on Monday, August 1st. I've already, Brian, sent in your credentials. I know you want to greet the president and tell him how great of a job that he's doing, and you want him to finish strong. But I think you're going to see a lot of Democrats nationally coming to this state.
I just wish he would come after my daughter is born so that I can introduce my newborn daughter to President Obama so that she can thank him for the trillions in debt that he has left her and her generation of Americans. And let me finish up by saying I don't think she's going to be here too much, because she may be having to defend blue states such as Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, which she's not planning on doing right now, but may end up having to do that if polling shows
it. But Brian, will you be at the tarmac to greet Donald Trump when he comes here?
On that note,
Because I will be at the tarmac waiting for Hillary Clinton. I'll even drive the vans and the motorcade because that's how much I support my nominee.
And let me finish with this. I want to finish on the third party thing. I believe that this is a huge opening for the Libertarians and the Green Party. The Green Party has a natural constituency with disaffected Bernie voters. The Libertarians have a natural constituency with Main Street, establishment-minded business Republicans. This is lining up unlike any election in mine or Theron's lifetimes, much less just in our political careers. We may see things we've never seen before. And if you are a political junkie, like the people listening right now and the people sitting in this room, this is a year to die for. There's so much excitement, so much drama. This is just every day you don't know what's going to happen, and it's so much better than Obama versus Romney.
And we'll be here to watch it. Brian Robinson is a former deputy chief of staff to Republican Governor Nathan Deal. Theron Johnson, Democratic strategist, former National Southern Regional Director of the Obama 2012 campaign. Thanks to both of you. See you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks.